I am stupid.
I am stupid for not thinking anything would happen in these 2 weeks since our last episode.
2 weeks it's been, but you get a whole off season worth of news in 2 weeks. There is so much to talk about today, and I am so unbelievably excited to talk about
it. Not even just talking about, like, the big, you know, news in the room, but, like, even just some small stuff. There's a lot to go over, so.
Do we knock out the elephant in the room immediately?
I think we have to knock out the elephant right away. So, if you haven't heard in the last 3 days, Lewis Hamilton will be leaving Mercedes at the end of 2025 and joining, or at the end of 2024, I'm sorry, and joining Ferrari at the beginning of the 2025 season. He did this because he activated a release option on his contract that he recently extended, I believe, in 2023.
Yeah.
I wrote this little point last week that I thought was going to be pretty big just overall for Lewis, but he brought back Mark Haynes to his management team, who he worked with in 2016 to 2021 and for 4 world championships. So now that you have some new management and a new team, I think we could get a shot at getting the old Lewis back.
I think you definitely can. You'll see it with every single driver who goes to Ferrari. There's so much passion for that team. I can't believe I'm saying it. Lewis Hamilton is going to be in a Ferrari next year. But
as someone who's just gotten in the sport in 1 year, I understand how.
It's like Messi going to Real Madrid.
Zach, the co-host of the Deep Fade, texted me and he was, break this down for me and what does this mean in like NBA terms? And I gave the analogy Green Bay letting go of Rodgers.
Yeah.
So like kind of franchise quarterback leaving. You got a franchise driver. He's been there since the team was, I don't want to say created because they bought out Braun. So, but since this team was created, he was a part of them.
Right before the heyday of Mercedes, Lewis was kind of the last piece in that puzzle to bring Mercedes to what it was in the early 2010s. And he rode through all that success with them. And now that, you know, Mercedes is in a bit of a slump, kind of takes you back to the days that Lewis was in the McLaren. You know, that was probably the most tumultuous period of his entire career. You know, he won his first world championship with McLaren back in 2008. But, you know, there was a lot of issues with team strategy and team management within McLaren that drove Lewis out of the team and, you know, gave him the belief that maybe he should take on a new project. And he did that with Mercedes. And, you know, now we have all that success. And it's definitely, you're getting some deja vu of that right now. And if Lewis could jumpstart the revival of, you know, early 2000s Ferrari, you know, I'm not a Lewis Hamilton fan. I very much respect the man for all of his achievements in F1. But if Lewis is the last key that we need to revive Ferrari, I am completely okay with that.
Yeah, I think it's
and I will support
a very
the man.
Fair point. He's also reported to make over $100 million a year, according to Giuliano Ducessi,
which is the biggest contract in the history of F1.
Yeah, $100 million a year for driving is, you know, not something any smaller team can do.
Unreal.
Any team, like, I don't even think Mercedes. I don't think Aston Martin can.
Mercedes was struggling to pay him $60 million a year, but you know all of that beautiful Ferrari money. It's like it never ends. But like I just can't believe I keep seeing these headlines, man. Like Lewis Hamilton in a Ferrari. I'm seeing it every 6 hours. Just another headline about Lewis being in a Ferrari next year. And I need to wake up. Like that's really what I feel like. It can't be real. But it is. And it's the biggest driver move I've ever seen since watching F1, and it's arguably easily top 5 in the entire history of the sport. But man, this guy's gonna be in a Ferrari next year. Oh my goodness!
Not for this year. Not race month. He's still with Mercedes for the end of the year.
That's why I said next year. But I can't, man. Oh my goodness!
It is pretty crazy. But keeping with Ferrari for a second, Charles earlier last week, I believe, signed another extension. And I wrote here with the depressing and inept strategist, but this was before Ferrari got
Lewis.
So I can't really say that anymore, but
yeah,
it makes a lot of sense why Charles was like, yeah, I'll sign again.
Yeah, his contract is actually now the longest one in F1. You know, when Max signed his new contract with Red Bull after he won the world championship in 2021, he signed that guy to the end of 2028. Charles is reportedly supposed to be with the team until the end of the 2029 season.
Wow.
So he now has the longest contract in F1. I'm not surprised. He is their number one driver. I'm very interested to see what the dynamic is between Lewis and Charles at that team. You know, they are both number one driver material. They've been number one drivers essentially their entire career. I guess Charles with Marcus Ericsson in his first year at Sauber, he wasn't the number one. Lewis in his first year with McLaren, Fernando Alonso was obviously the number one driver at that team. But their entire careers, they've been the number one drivers, and now they're in the most prestigious team. And I'm very interested to see how that dynamic unfolds, especially just seeing how it was with Carlos and Ferrari, because you know, I'll hold my hands up and say, you know, Carlos and Charles were pretty much equal last year. You know, Charles had his stretches of being much more consistent, better than Carlos, but Carlos also had the same thing. But regardless of what was happening with either driver, Ferrari was still giving preferential treatment to Leclerc no matter what. So I want to see with such a decorated driver, the most decorated driver in Lewis Hamilton, how that affects Charles's career. Because this is not a one-year thing. Lewis did sign a multi-year contract. So let's say if Lewis outperforms Charles in his first year, does that make Ferrari think, you know, maybe we need to dial back on baby Charles and maybe give somebody else a shot to run this team into a world championship?
I think it's going to be more of a race to race thing with these two, because they're both, like you were saying, they are both number one drivers for a team material. But knowing them and knowing Lewis being a team player in the past, there's a lot of times where they're going to need to play off each other and maybe let one of them go because they have a little bit more pace or better tires or something small like that. But I think this is a good move for Ferrari to close the gap in the Constructors' Cup against Red Bull, because
most definitely
you have to be having faith in your car to be getting a driver like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you wouldn't go out. I'm going to compare this to the 2023 Ferrari, but you wouldn't want Lewis in that car.
Oh, absolutely not.
Like, it just wouldn't work at all. It's too...
But that car was too unpredictable.
Yeah, there was a lot of problems with that car, but...
Yeah, I think, especially with... I know Charles and Lewis both have a lot of respect for each other. You know, George and Lewis did, but George was, I guess, much more of a... I don't want to say a child, but George immediately came into Mercedes and said, I want to be the number one driver. I don't care how long Lewis has been here. You know, I had to work my butt off to get into this team. And, you know, that showed on track so many times last year and in 2022. I think it's going to be a lot different with Charles and Lewis. I definitely agree with what you're saying. They're definitely going to work together. They'll hopefully work for the benefit of the team, because you know, working for the benefit of the team, that's going to ensure that they have a better chance at winning a world championship. And, you know, isn't that what you want? I mean, Charles has drilled it to the ground how bad he wants to be a world champion with Ferrari. And Lewis definitely has the has the same aspirations. But, you know, you got to put the team first, and then the team will put the backing in you and push you to that championship you're willing.
I saw a stat on Instagram where that said last year if Lance Stroll finished in, I want to say like P8 or P7 for every single race, that Aston Martin would have came in second in the Constructors' Cup by 3 points. So just an idea, but that kind of moves on to...
Definitely. That kind of moves on to... Not good for that team. No. But, you know.
Nick moves on to our next point where, what does Carlos do now?
Does he go to Mercedes? You know, does he try to open those contract negotiations? I don't think so, given the whole Audi rebranding that's happening in 2026 and how heavily he's been linked with that team. I think he was going to be out of Ferrari, you know, after 2025 anyways. So what's one extra year? I think that pulls into question how long somebody like Valtteri is going to stay in the sport. I mean, I don't think he's staying into that whole new set of regulations. I think, you know, he'll go do some mountain biking or go roast some coffee in Finland or something. But I got to try his coffee, by the way. I know he does that. I got to give that a shot. But yeah, I think he'll probably be out of the sport by then. You might see a Joe Carlos team. You might see a Joe Porcher team. You could see a Porcher Carlos team at Audi. I'd say probably Porcher and Sainz. I don't think Joe's going to stay in the sport for that long. He is a paid driver at heart. But that still begs the question of, you know, Mercedes having an open seat, and what do they do with that?
So I don't know if you've seen this, but for some of the listeners, Fernando Alonso and George Russell have spent the last two New Year's Eves together celebrating. They've also been spending a lot of time in the off season, and I personally think that Fernando could want to go to Mercedes. I think that car is a better fit. I think it gives him a better chance of trying to be a contender for another world championship. But also, it gives the George would be a happy teammate then.
It also gives Fernando a more competent driver to mentor.
And car.
Yeah. I'm very worried for that Aston Martin this year, and I really don't want to have another Alonso McLaren, you know, mid 2010s McLaren again. I don't want to see him just die in that team, essentially. Like, there's just so much that can happen with this. I know a lot of people also linked Alex Albon to Mercedes, but, you know, there's... I'll let you talk about that, but there's some speculative news about Alex Albon to Red Bull, maybe, and that opens a whole can of beans. Like, there's just so much going on with this one move, and it happens every silly season. It's so crazy that this current season that we're going into next month was the first time in the history of the sport that not a single driver changed teams in the offseason. I can't believe that's also the first time that's happened. But yeah, I'll let you talk about Alex Albon to Red Bull potentially, and then I'll kind of dive in after you.
Yeah. So he was supposedly offered a 3-year deal at Red Bull Racing starting in 2025. Now, I don't think this is going to happen just because Albon, A, left Red Bull, B, has been doing decent at Williams.
I'd say better than decent.
And my thing is, does no one remember earlier this year where Liam and Danny Rick were both promised spots in 2025?
Yeah, they were promised to be able to kind of duke it out for that spot. I mean, Yuki Tsunoda as well. You know, it's very interesting. I personally believe, you know, given the chance, why would you not go back to Red Bull? You know, if you're offered a 3-year contract at the World Drivers Championship winning team the past 3 seasons, why would you not take that? Like, even if you're going to be a second driver to Max Verstappen, I know Alex Albon has really found a place in Williams, and if he believes in that project, he should actually stay at Williams. But like personally, if I was in his shoes, I would go back in the Red Bull. I have so much more confidence now, you know, compared to my 2020 stint in the Red Bull, where, you know, that kind of destroyed Alex Albon's career. He obviously repaired that greatly with all of his success at Williams as of recent. But I think Alex will and should take that opportunity. So, you know, that would leave another seat open at Williams then. And, you know, who does Williams go for? Somebody like Zach O'Sullivan in Formula 2? Do they take a veteran? Does Mercedes take somebody like Antonelli or Vesti? Or do they take somebody like Mick Schumacher or Fernando Alonso, like you said? You know, there's so many moving parts to this. I think this will pull a lot of young talent into the sport. You're going to see a lot of different teams next year. Almost every single team, you know, bar Ferrari, I think, is going to have a completely different driver lineup next year. But, yeah, I'm really excited to kind of just sit back and watch this puzzle kind of build itself off of what Lewis did. So we'll definitely see. You know, you could also, now that I'm thinking about it, you could see potentially a driver having to sit out for a season as well. You know, if the pieces don't fall into place for them, you're like, there's genuinely potential that Carlos Sainz might not be driving in F1 next year. You know, take a year off, do some endurance racing, do some rallying, something like that. But I don't know. Carlos is a notable enough name. I think he'll definitely find a place to sit for a year while he waits for that project at Audi. But yeah, that's definitely something to think about.
Lando Norris extends contract with McLaren. That made me pretty happy just because I like what McLaren's doing with the two young drivers and really just focusing on them for the next few years.
Yeah, that team is in a phenomenal place.
And hopefully this car is a little bit better than last year so they can put up a little bit better of a fight against both Ferrari and Red Bull now. So,
I mean, hey, the only real improvement they need to do is beating Red Bull. I mean, they were unbelievable at the end of the year last year. I mean, honestly, after the summer break. But I really like them picking two young drivers and just sticking with them because that team is now getting future-proofed with the both of them. I think Oscar's definitely going to extend his contract at some point soon. But there's a lot of positive things going on at McLaren. And that team is going to be a force to be reckoned with like it was in the early 2000s in years to come, so long as they nail that regulation change in 2026, which I'm not too worried about. They have such good personnel in that team, so I'm definitely not worried about that.
Out of the car reveals, we've had one reveal so far, with two more coming tomorrow, February 5th. Haas revealed their car, and with all the speculation and things that have happened in the last month over there, it looks good.
I think it looks really good. Like it looks very similar to last year. They just replaced a lot of the white on the car with what I'm guessing is carbon fiber. I mean, a lot of teams are doing it now, but I think the way they have implemented that black onto the car is just beautiful. Now, the tire deg of that car and the race pace of that car, is that going to be the same this year? I have no idea. We'll see at preseason testing, but that thing is beautiful. I'm going to say it. Right now, it's my favorite car that's been revealed so far. And technically, hey, that beats out the McLaren because we know that dropped a couple weeks ago.
The livery didn't. The car didn't.
Okay, dude. Like, yeah, just wait till the uniforms drop.
It's also just like saying Max hasn't won a race this year. Like, you're not wrong technically, but like at the same time, yeah, you are. But
I have not heard the Dutch national anthem yet this year.
It's a good feeling, I'm not going to lie. I'll let you take this other big piece of news with a new track.
Madrid.
Because you have more feelings about this than I do.
I do. I can't lie. It's cool to race in a city like Madrid, but it's another doomed street track. You know, and this has me very worried. So I'll go into a little history lesson here. When we raced at Valencia back in the early 2010s, they made a street circuit in Valencia. It ended up being on a like the dock of a harbor, essentially. It was a really cool track. It was kind of horrible for racing, I can't lie. There were some great moments, like the Pastor Maldonado dive bomb onto Lewis Hamilton. That was so funny. But there were some good moments at that track. It was Fernando's first GP victory in Spain. That was really cool. But you see this a lot with just the Spanish government as a whole. There was so much corruption that went into the formation of that track and just the race organizers as a whole that they could never come to a contract extension for it. The race, you know, went off the calendar after 2013, never came back. There's sections of that track that are still there in just absolute ruins. And I don't want to see something happen like that with this track because it kind of follows the same outline, I guess. You know, it's race organizers wanting to make a bunch of money and, you know, bring people into the city. And if it doesn't work out like Valencia did, you are going to fall into the exact same kind of trap. Now, when you get to the track itself, it actually looks pretty cool. I can't lie. And I think the thing that really hits home for me that I think is really nice, and I'll get into this with our next potential track reveal after this, is how notable public transit is for this race. Apparently 90% of spectators are supposed to be able to get to the track via city public transit, which is really nice.
That's going to be huge just for driving the cost down because that's a huge issue for trying to go to these races. Like, as an American, we only have three races here, and geographically, they're not very close to where we are here in Chicago, so it's a little tough to get to a race, but with 90% of your attendees getting there via public transportation and probably another 7% getting there via private jet, it's still very impressive. It's going to be huge for just...
Via private jet.
It's going to be huge just for getting more people that may not have the opportunity or have the money to go to a Las Vegas or a Monaco to get them to just go see a race, which at the end of the day, we're trying to grow the sport. Drive to Survive is doing a huge job doing that, which comes out in, I believe, less than 2-3 weeks now. So a little plug for that. But
20 corners too. That's very high when compared to your notable purpose-built racetracks.
Like in Austria.
Like Austria having 10 corners or something like Canada with 16. You know, there's not a lot in these purpose-built circuits, but this Madrid one, it's going to be a very technical circuit. There's still like a decent amount of straights, but you're going to see some, you know, some 90 lefts, some 90 rights, but... You know, there's also supposed to be like a, you know, one really cool corner through a roundabout, which makes me think of the GP in Long Beach in IndyCar, which is a really, really cool race. If you've never watched it before, you definitely should. You know, that's for our U.S. listeners, very easy to watch. It'll be on ESPN or NBC, something like that. But those technical elements are very cool, and that's the thing I think I'm most excited for. I mean, you've seen it in Jeddah already. Like, the corners on that track are so unbelievably satisfying when you get them right.
But
and
so,
I think you'll
so,
see something like this.
So punishing if you get them wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
We got just under 5.5 kilometers on the Madrid street circuit. And
which is on the longer side. Which is a good thing.
It is
I like
good.
A long lap time.
I do. It's going to be less laps, but the laps are going to be more entertaining, in my opinion. Estimated lap time is going to be about a 1:32. I bet Max gets a 1:28 in the first race. And
yep.
I saw someone playing F123 get a sub 1:22 on a hot lap. So,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting. That's
Wait, it was probably on a Seto Corsa. There's no way that's an F1 already.
I think it was a custom map.
Oh, okay, custom map, yeah.
But I'll let you take this away, but what does this mean for Barcelona?
I'm not excited for this because I don't think, you know, there's only two nations that have multiple races. It's the United States and Italy. I don't think they're going to keep two Spanish GPs. I think what they need to do with Barcelona, and it really pains me to say this, like, I hope at the absolute least they do something where, you know, maybe they rotate Madrid and Barcelona out every single year. But what I think is a very good play is bringing preseason testing back to Barcelona like it was before COVID. One thing that always sucked with Barcelona was the fact that the race was always very boring given the fact that you had three straight days of testing on it. So, you know, when you pull up to Barcelona 3-4 months later, you already have all of the necessary data. The practice sessions are very lackluster, and that transitions into the race. So doing preseason testing at a track that you're not racing at during the year, you know, you're really just focused on figuring out the cars. You're not getting a competitive advantage over the other teams at a track that you're going to race at in the future. So I think what they do for Barcelona is bring preseason testing back there so that we don't lose that track and these teams don't get such a competitive advantage for a race down the line. I think that's really what we should go for.
Keeping with tracks and some of the speculation behind that, there's been a little news with our city here in Chicago. A lot of people were checking the trademark for Formula One and saw four new ones that are a little alarming for some people. And
our European fans, you're not going to be happy about this.
But for the American fans, and especially anyone in the Midwest, this might be a huge win. Chicago Grand Prix
has been trademarked by Formula One management.
And so is three other things. We got Grand Prix of Chicago, Formula One Chicago Grand Prix, and Formula One Grand Prix of Chicago. So the first two, Oliver and I have agreed, is to block those names from letting NASCAR use them.
Yeah, because I feel like Grand Prix is a very notable term, you know, in open wheel racing.
I mean, like a stock car. I learned what Grand Prix was from Mario Kart when I was 7.
And guess what? The stock car in Mario Kart is an open wheeler. But anyways, yeah, I definitely think the Grand Prix of Chicago and Chicago Grand Prix, they're definitely going to use those to block NASCAR. But then also trademarking the same two names, but with Formula One in front of the both of them.
That's where the question is raised, where it's like, oh, okay.
Are we future-proofing?
Are we looking at kind of a similar style of NASCAR with changes to the track to make it more appropriate for those style of cars? But I mean, just imagine those cars driving down Lakeshore Drive.
Unbelievable.
And if it's a night, I mean, it's not going to be a night race unless it's in the summer, because
seeing a silver Mercedes under the bean, are you kidding me? Dude, I've also seen a lot about, you know, obviously, I'm sorry, but the Europeans are pissed about this. Like, if, you know, if the U.S. has four races, this is some absolute BS.
All of Europe has the other 20.
Exactly. You have to understand, Europe,
some of them are in the Middle East, yes, but
yeah,
Europe, but like, you have majority of the races, and you've had them for, you know,
ever.
60 years. So I think you can share a few
you have to understand.
With the Americans that are also a huge fan. We're not trying to, like, draw dividing.
We're not trying to steal your sport.
We're not, I swear. But
it's like, you know, you have to understand, the United States is the size of Europe. So we actually have a disproportionately small amount of races for how big the United States is. You have to think every state in the U.S. is like a country in Europe.
GDP and in size.
Yeah. But what I was seeing from a lot of people on the internet, which is something I would be completely cool with, would be either completely knocking off Miami or rotating Miami and a potential Chicago. That could be really cool.
So the problem with that, because just on a more F1 business side of things is the money that goes into sponsoring that. Because Crypto.com is one of the main sponsors for Miami.
Yeah, definitely.
So, just...
I know. It's definitely... It's money that they could lose, and I know that they have a pre-existing deal, so that's probably not going to get affected.
Until that deal might be over, or if they are also given... like a first option to sponsor the Chicago race as well. Now, that would also be really cool just because hopefully we'll get someone on here in the future that can be talking about Miami and crypto.com with us, but it's just going to be interesting. I want to know a lot about the business side of this and what goes into that, but it is interesting to speculate if there is going to be a race in Chicago. I mean, the closest track that we have, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, is Road America in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's the closest you're going to get. Mid-Ohio as well.
Mid-Ohio.
Pretty close too, but Wisconsin borders us.
And then Detroit would be the biggest one.
Yeah, Belle Isle. Pretty close.
I mean, you got Road Atlanta.
It's a beautiful one.
That was... Shout out my boys that go there.
And one of my favorites is Virginia. Man, that is a beautiful track.
I've never seen that. I will have to check that out when we're done here today.
I'll have to show you that on iRacing one day. It's a beauty.
I mean, I think I kind of want to go more into the NASCAR side of this too, because if this does mean that there's going to be two racing events in this city where... construction is already a huge problem.
They're going to have to happen on the same week.
And B, we have seen how Vegas gets affected by this. Now, I don't think Chicago is going to quite do that. You know, we are used to having big events here in the city. We have a lot of music events in the summer. So we're comfortable with setting things up to make...
We
definitely have the infrastructure. I've seen, you know, the portable towers for getting mobile data up and everything, but it's more so the fact that it's an issue of when of time, because like we saw Vegas, it gets cold in the desert the winter.
It would almost have to happen in the summer.
It gets cold here in September. So
you have a very short window to work with here.
And like we saw with NASCAR last year, it was completely rained out and we only got, I believe, half the race actually.
Dude, that was one of the craziest motor racing events I've ever seen. So literally one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
It's a time crunch. It's a variability with weather. You know, if it's a track where these guys are actually using wet tires, cool. That would also be cool because we haven't seen wet tires be used all of last year.
Nope, because F1 will just red flag a race if the wet tires need to be used. Why have them in the first place anyway? I'm not going to go on a rant about that, but yeah, there's definitely a lot to think about when it comes to this race. I think NASCAR would end up having to be like a support series for F1 that weekend. You know, F1 would be the main event. Obviously, it's a bigger market. So yeah, NASCAR would kind of fall under that, and they would hopefully go on the same weekend. So you'd get, you know, your NASCAR and your F1 race in the same day. But also speaking about all this, you know, US based stuff. We had huge news when it came to Andretti Cadillac getting denied their grid spot, which I was genuinely shocked.
It's sad because everyone over there at Andretti and Cadillac believed that they could really compete, but
which they could.
According to the AP News, F1 said that the team could not prepare a competitive car for the 2025 season, as well as a second car built under the upcoming 2026 regulations. They said it was too big for Andretti and General Motors to handle such a massive undertaking and actually be competitive on the track, which is understandable. It is understandable. But at the time, instead of rejecting them outright... if that's the only, like, main reason that you're keeping them from joining,
I feel
just
like
push
you
it back.
Yeah, I was gonna say
push
I feel
it
like
back
you have
to like 2028.
give them some type of time frame.
Because you know they're going to just apply again the next time they can and pray again. And I don't know.
They'll apply again. I don't doubt that at all.
Quick side note. When does regulations change? Is it every 5 years or something?
It depends.
Okay.
So they were supposed to change in 2021. That got backed to 2022 because of COVID. There was, I'd say your most recent major reg changes were 2014 with the V6 turbo hybrid. Then you had 2017 when honestly the entire chassis of all the cars really changed. Then you had 2022 with that new chassis and structure of the car. And then you have the new power units in 2026. Those are your notable ones.
So 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Then I don't see why you can't try to get them in 2027.
I don't understand. And it's like you have people at this team is headed by people like Mario Andretti. This dude is a Formula One world champion with Lotus in 1978, multiple race winner, obviously. But you also have to think about Andretti being the most notable name
in American racing.
If somebody like Haas can make it onto the grid in 2016, why can't Andretti? It doesn't make any sense.
Does Haas have like WEC?
No.
Then
Haas's majority comes from NASCAR. Like that's where you see them the most is in NASCAR.
So you're letting a NASCAR team in, but you're not letting a team that's already competing in WEC in?
Yeah. Like when I put somebody like Peugeot on the grid or something like that, I don't know. You go around like anywhere in the United States and more people are going to say that they know who Andretti or Penske is than somebody like Haas.
Or Williams.
But we got to keep it to American here.
We do. But
when
we're talking about F1 teams, if I go to anyone, a lot of people down south know Andretti because of the entertainment centers there. They have go-kart and entertainment centers. There's one about 5 minutes from where I used to live in Georgia. It is an awesome place. You can play racing sims. You can play go-karting. It's fun. It's really fun. Andretti's everywhere. His name's everywhere. You see him everywhere. And that's a huge part of why they're popular is because people know these names. And
it's not like they're not competitive in the U.S.
Of course. Like, they're competitive in WEC. So,
yeah.
And my thing, too, is like, okay, maybe they're not going to be winning the championships, like the Drivers' Championship or the Construction Championship. But
you have teams in F1 who haven't had a podium.
You don't think they can put a car together that can compete with Haas and
Alfa Romeo?
And
Kick Sauber Steak, F1 team money, crypto.
And Visa Cash App Racing Bulls?
Yeah, exactly, dude.
So I think it's a pretty stupid decision. I really would like to see another two cars on the grid. With more people comes more competition, comes more little moments that are memorable, and brings two more three or four more personalities that we get to see in the F1 world.
Gunther Steiner could come back.
If he's just the signified just Kickstarter of a team, that would
make that man a pundit. He would be so good.
Get this man back to Drive to Survive.
Just let that guy head the show.
I wouldn't be surprised if they honestly are just like, hey, do you want to just be our host?
Dude, I would love that.
That would be pretty cool.
He's such a good personality. And
him and the
I feel like he would love to do something like that.
The old Renault guy.
Didn't
they have a little video of them driving around in their little car just talking?
Oh, I don't know. I gotta look that up now.
I saw a little bit of Steiner news, but he's releasing his book soon. And depending where you are in the world, I don't believe it is available in the US, but we can double check this and see if I'm wrong. But there's gonna be an audiobook version where he's reading it.
Oh, I'm totally listening to that.
That's going to be pretty cool. I'll be really, really excited for that. Do you want to... No, I'll take away the Lancia news because I already...
Very excited.
Kind of said it a little bit over on some of the other shows on Aletheia. Go check those out. But Lancia is making a return to Rally in the WRC, which is pretty big. WRC has been kind of struggling in the last 10, 15 years, but I would say right now they are making a comeback in popularity among American and international fans. And with Lancia, you have another WRC winning team. You have a team that competed a lot in, I believe, 1982 to 86.
Okay.
They won in 83 for the World Rally Car. They are famed for the Martini livery that was on the Lancia 37.
Yep. I know exactly.
And overall, it's just a really, really cool car and cool company. They're returning after a 30-year hiatus under the new ownership of Stellantis. Forgive me if I pronounce that wrong.
Oh, no, I got
wrong,
you.
But
I got you covered.
It's coming up. A lot of teams are making it back. You know, you have some famous ones like Subaru and Mitsubishi. Now that you have another one with Lancia, you know, you could see some throwbacks to the Martini livery, which would make any old rally fan kind of just be warmed at heart for seeing that.
I also just find it so alarming that the World Rally Championship has struggled for so long, just given how entertaining it is to watch. Like, if you've never, you know, checked out like any rallying,
check out, if anyone's a Ken Block fan for Americans, this is where that man kind of got a lot of his fame, was from Rally Car and World Rally Cup. Go check out his onboard cameras.
It's quite literally art. It is so beautiful to watch that man and just watch.
There's a lot. If you like F1 and think those guys are talented, you will see Rally and be like, wow. Because you're making 40 different decisions while someone's talking to you next to you, giving you information about the course, because there's a lot to remember. There's a lot of sharp corners, a lot of speed changes, and a
lot of terrain.
And you're still racing against other cars. So, and there's no stands because the courses are very, very small. The roads are very, very
narrow. They could be made of dirt, they could be made of snow,
gravel.
It's
on anything. And you see those cars, like, I believe they're one of the old rally cars in like the early 2000s could go 0 to 60 on gravel in like 2.9,
which is unbelievable with how much friction you're losing on the gravel. That's a crazy statistic. But like, literally look up just coolest shots in rally, and you'll see just how mesmerizing this kind of stuff is.
And if you like old footage, old rally car footage with 80,000 fans in attendance, where the roads are caked with people on both sides that are just pushing the boundaries of how close you can get, and you not being able to see quarter mile in front of you because there's just people standing on the track running, getting off. It is absolutely insane.
Yeah, look up Carlos Sainz's his father's rally highlights.
Those fans are also the only fans in the world that can help the actual competitors with any troubles, because I've seen those fans help and fix those cars on the side of the road in under 5 minutes. Bro, there was a little sidetrack, but a car's hood popped up.
Yeah.
And driver couldn't see where he's going, so he just pulls over. And like five guys come out of the off the little hill right next to the road.
Yeah.
Jump down, immediately slam the hood down, bashing it, closing it, locking it, kicking the bumper back into place, and then waving the driver off. And it's so cool. It is.
Well, if you want to be part of a pit crew, you now know where to go.
Yeah. I mean, those guys over there, they're doing it for not as much money and not as much fame as the guys at F1, but...
And they are risking their lives more.
Way more. But applauds to them. Thank you for the entertainment.
And I'm really excited.
Yeah,
it's going to be so cool.
So we're coming down to one of the last points of today, but Sebastian Vettel.
There's
been a lot of talk about
a race to win.
and the post on Instagram where he posts his old Red Bull picture saying getting ready for next season. So he's always been kind of foreshadowing if he's going to return or not. I think he would be a cool third driver to kind of bring on a team and kind of mentor some of the guys and
Be a personnel in the garage. Yeah, something
just
like that.
Just to be around the grid and kind of raising the spirits of everyone, because everyone loves that man. Everyone cares about him, and he's such a heartwarming person.
And he's just a good person for the world. Like the amount of charitable and environmentally prosperous actions that he's had in the past few years, you can't do anything besides respect that man.
The B corner at Suzuki is one of the coolest things. It's
Suzuka.
I'm sorry.
One day we'll get you there.
That one's on me.
No, I'm just messing with you. But I mean, Seb's probably not going to come back to like any of these teams to race. But
no,
I like that he's, you know, kind of teasing it, that kind of stuff. But yeah, definitely, you know, having him be in some team personnel role would be really cool. Like I really miss Seb on the grid, especially post Red Bull, because you know everybody hated Seb when he was at Red Bull because he was winning and he was kind of a jerk, I can't lie. But you know, he is one of the most heartwarming people that that F1's seen in the past 20 years. So any way to get that man back, I am totally happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I would just like him to be back in the F1 world, no matter where it is, if he's an announcer or anything, just get him back in there because people love him. He's a great personality.
Dude, he could do something like Nico Rosberg did, where he stood in with Martin Brundle on a couple race weekends, taking over for David Croft. That was really cool. Having Nico Rosberg as a commentator was really nice. And I think Seb would do an even better job, honestly.
Yeah, I'm just doing a little seeing if there's any more breaking news with F1, but
I'm
seeing a little bit of stuff about Andretti was kind of operating under the pretense that 2026 would be the year they're joining. And so,
I wonder if they've done any development, you know?
So, yeah, I'm kind of just reading through right now that they're kind of pushing to fight back the decision and
which
just
I think
kind
they
of
should.
Talk more because
they for sure have to have some form of a right to an appeal. You know, I wonder, you know, I guess going back to this, I know most teams in F1 were not happy about getting an 11th constructor on the grid. Do we think that that decision was in any way influenced by them? Probably.
Definitely is going to be something you think about during that. But at the same time, as a business, I think it's good to have more competition and more people. Gets more money in there, gets more fans, because you're going to, if Andretti comes to the grid, a lot of Americans will start caring. Because now that there's an American brand that they know and is a little bit more famed and reputable than Haas, I think you do get a lot of, I'm not going to say younger fans, but a lot of like in that middle age group fans.
And just another demographic of people.
Mm-hmm.
F1 management, stop gatekeeping.
Please. But is there anything else, Oliver?
I think we're going to start going back to once a week now.
We are. We will be. This is going to be dropping on a Sunday just because of some conflicting schedules with both myself and Oliver, but also with Tassos and some of the plans that we have coming this week. We're having a PWHL reporter on the Good Morning Hockey show tomorrow, so tune in to check that out. Two more episodes of The Deep Fade coming out this week, and then we will be back on Monday next week.
Can't wait to see you guys.
We got the rest. We got, I believe, another 4 or 5 car reveals in the next week, so that gives us something to talk about. And
we'll have 2 weeks of car reveals.
And then, happy race month, everyone!
Happy race month, Sir Lewis in scarlet red, baby! I can't believe I'm gonna see it.
Everyone's a Ferrari fan.
We're all Ferrari fans, baby, just like Seb said.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Have a great week, you guys. We'll see you soon.